Epiphany. I love Epiphany because when we lived in Paris, the French don't really do Christmas very much. They do Réveillon, where they all get to go and have a big meal on New Year's Eve, and then they all turn out for Epiphany. So you go down the street, you see all these little children with little gold crowns on, and it was just a wonderful sight. It was sort of the only manifestation of anything religious I ever came across in France. So this morning, we start off with an old joke. A little boy goes home to his father, and he's very upset. "Daddy," he says, "something terrible has happened to the vicar." "Something terrible has happened to the vicar. He has lost Jesus, and he thinks it might be me who took him." "What do you mean?" says his father. "Well, he kept asking all the children in the Sunday school, 'Have you found Jesus?' And he looked at me." So that is, "Have you found Jesus?" And today we're all here to find Jesus. That's what the Epiphany is all about. That is what the three wise men were all about. So last week we heard how Jesus was left behind in the temple and the worry his parents had that they might have lost Jesus. And if you're at the 9 o'clock service, you'll remember, I'm sure you'll remember my sermon on the subject of Emmanuel, God with us. I use the illustration of that great poem, Footprints. You remember that's the one where a person looks back on their life and they can see two sets of footprints in the sand, and then at one point there's only one. I said, "God, all the time there were those two footprints. When I most needed you, there was only one set of footprints. Where were you when I needed you?" "That, my child, is when I was carrying you." And it illustrates that God is there even when we don't necessarily see or feel him. He's always God with us, even when we don't expect it. And this morning, I want to show you how we are with God even when we don't expect him. Let me tell you, if you're all sitting comfortably, let me tell you the story of the other wise man, written by Henry Van Dyke, a North American pastor. He led a church in New York. He was a friend, I think, of Woodrow Wilson, and he went over to France at the early part of the war as an ambassador to the Netherlands and to Luxembourg. But he mainly remembered for the uplifting books he wrote, of which this story is one of them. He imagines a Persian called Artaban, a magi, seeing the star and wanting to join his friends Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar. He's arranged to meet them many miles away in Babylonia at midnight, 10 days after the night when all the stars are in the right conjunction. Like them, he's prepared a present to give to the future king. He's got three wonderful jewels suitable to add to the royal treasure. He's got a ruby, redder than a ray of light at sunrise, a sapphire, as blue as a fragment of the sky at night, and a pearl as pure as the peak of a snow mountain at twilight. He sets out on his journey. It's going to take 10 days, and he starts by making good progress. But as he passes beyond the walls of Babylon to the temple of the seven spheres where they've arranged to meet, his horse stumbles on the body of a man lying in the road. It's a Jew, a descendant of the Jews who had been carried into exile. He's almost dead. Artaban stops to try to give him water and some of the medicine that he as a magi always has with him. After many hours, the man regains consciousness and strength and asks who saved him. Artaban tells of his journey to Jerusalem to search for the king of the Jews. The old Jew thanks him for his help and says he's nothing to give him in return except that he can tell that from ancient prophecy the king will be born in Bethlehem of Judea, not in Jerusalem. By the time Artaban gets to the place of rendezvous, his friends have long since gone. He's obliged to go back to Jerusalem and sell his first jewel, a sapphire, in order to buy his own train of camels, because his trusty horse will be no use in the desert. Eventually, after another long journey, he arrives in Bethlehem. He finds the village deserted by its menfolk. At an open door, he sees a young mother with a baby. She confirms that his strange friends were indeed in Bethlehem only a few days before, and that they're paid reverence to the child of Joseph of Nazareth. They're given the child gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Then they had disappeared as quickly as they had arrived. Even Joseph, his wife and child, had vanished, some say for Egypt. And now there was a rumor that Roman soldiers were coming to enforce a new tax, so the men had all taken the sheep up into the hills. The young woman gives him a meal after his journey, but it's interrupted by the noise of soldiers in the street and cries that the Romans are killing all the children. Artaban goes to the door and a captain of soldiers comes to the house to enter it. Artaban blocks the door, and when asked what he's doing, replies that he's all alone in the house and waiting to give a jewel to the soldier who will leave him in peace. He hands over the ruby to the soldier, who moves on to the next house. The woman gives him her blessing. "You saved the life of my baby. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he make his face to shine upon you. May he be gracious to you and give you peace." So Artaban sets off on the road to Egypt. Amongst the great throng of Jews in that country, he fails to find the promised Messiah. But he meets a learned rabbi who tells him that the new light of the world will be found not in a palace. He'll be found amongst the poor, the lonely, the sorrowful, the oppressed. For years, Artaban searches for the little family from Bethlehem amongst refugees, in countries laid waste by famine, in cities struck by plague and illness, in prisons in many countries. In all of these, he found none to worship, but he found many to help. He was able to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to heal the sick, and to comfort the captive. But he was never able to find and worship the Messiah who he sought. 33 years passed by, and by now an old man, his pilgrimage had almost come full circle as he was back in Jerusalem. It was Passover, and the streets were filled with thousands of people. He found himself caught up in an excited crowd. A man called Jesus of Nazareth, a wonder worker, much loved by the people, was going to be crucified outside the city. His crime was being called the Son of God, and Pilate was going to put a notice on the cross mocking him as King of the Jews. Artaban was very excited. Perhaps after all these years, he was finally to meet the one he'd been searching for. Perhaps he could use his pearl to ransom him. The crowd he was with was momentarily swept aside by soldiers going in the other direction, taking a prisoner, a young girl with them. As she went past Artaban, she broke away from the soldiers and threw herself at his feet. She begged him to save her life. Her father had died, and she was to be sold as a slave to pay off his debts. "Please save me from a fate worse than death." Artaban thought of the pearl, the last of his jewels. He had intended to use them for religious purposes, but they'd been taken from him in the service of humanity. Was this last one to go the same way? Was this his great opportunity or his last temptation? He knew that to help the girl would be a true act of love. And is not love the light of the soul? He gave the girl the pearl. "This is your ransom, daughter. It's the last of my treasures that I kept for the king." While he spoke, the sky darkened and the earth heaved with an earthquake. The old man crouched in the shadow of a wall and thought his time had come. His quest was over. It had failed. But yet, he felt at peace as he had done his best. With the last tremor of the earth, a tile on the roof was dislodged and struck Artaban on the head. As he lay on the ground dying, the girl thought she heard a voice like music in the air. When it finished, the old man whispered as if in answer, "No, Lord, it wasn't me. When did I see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink, or in prison and visited you? I've looked for you for 33 years, but I never found you." The music sounded again, but this time the girl thought she heard a voice saying, "Verily, I say unto you, inasmuch as you've done it unto the least of these my brethren, you've done it unto me." And that is how the fourth wise man found his king. So if you've come here this morning looking to find Jesus, you may find him in our prayers and worship in this church. He'll be present in a very real way in the bread and wine that we shared in his name at communion. But he'll be present in that ugly world outside. Through human hands, he will be ministering to the refugees from Syria and across the Middle East. He'll be feeding the hungry in Yemen and in the slums of Calcutta. He'll be visiting the sick in our hospitals and the prisoners in Downview and High Down prisons in Banstead. And he'll be in our homes and our hearts this Christmastide whenever we follow his commandment to love the Lord our God with all our hearts and souls and strength, and our neighbors in all their strange and varied forms as ourselves. We can find God even when we don't expect him. Amen.